Welcome to the Inspired Business Leaders Podcast, brought to you by Inspire Wealth, bringing you interviews with top business professionals, empowering you to understand our current business climate and the successes and struggles other business professionals have overcome. Here's your host, Nick Boer.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Inspired Business Leaders Podcast. This is your host, Nick Boer with Inspire Wealth. And today's episode is something a little out of the ordinary that people may not always think about, but I think it's great. I'm really excited to actually talk about it. I have on Dr. Sweltlo, that is a fertility infertility specialist, as well as an OBGYN, and just has a lot of experience dealing with the ability to conceive or the inability to conceive. So, Dr. Sweltlo, thank you for being with us and welcome to the show.
Nick, thank you so much for having me. This is such an important topic. I'm really excited to be here and chat with you about it today.
For sure. Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I'm starting to see more and more people in either in my friend circle or in my life that are either clients or friends that are younger professionals or younger individuals. As you probably see all the time, some of the younger generation are waiting a little bit longer to conceive or to start a family. And that's where you can see a lot more of the fertility struggles. So, I think it's great that that we can have you on and make sure that our listeners have an additional resource and are able to listen to some of the things that people should be thinking about. And one of the things I want to start with is just family planning in general, because it seems like as I already mentioned, so many of the younger generation it is not having kids as young as like our parents did. So it seems like a lot of people are waiting into their 30s, sometimes even mid 30s. And help our listeners understand, like, what does family planning look like? What are you talking to with families and with couples and with women nowadays?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first thing I'll say is I will try to keep this as practical as possible. I'll try not to get too medical on you. But the second thing, I think this is really important, and what you say is very true. If we look back to the 1940s and 50s, the average age of the first live birth was, in a woman's 20s. Now we regularly see people in their 30s and 40s having children. People may have read the news of Janet Jackson. I believe she was 52 or 53 when she had her child. So I think that family planning becomes a really important discussion to have, not only as you're coming up through your late teen years, your 20s, but once you get married, you're starting your life with your partner. It's definitely an important discussion to have. When we talk about family planning, the first question, and hopefully you asked this before the engagement ring, is, do you want to have children? Yes or no?
Right.
If the answer is no, okay, fine. If the answer is yes, then there needs to be a little bit of thought that goes into that. Specifically with women, we know there's a concept called ovarian aging. We know that women are born with all the eggs they're going to have. They lose those eggs as they get older. And so there is, unfortunately, this very real biological clock that begins to tick after the age of 35. And, I always tell people it's not like something magical happens on your 35th birthday. Of course, it's a continuum, but it is an important benchmark for people to keep in mind. So as couples are planning, maybe they're finishing college, maybe they're thinking about grad school, in my community, in the physician community, we actually see higher rates of infertility because women are waiting longer and longer. There was actually a study that came out last summer that said that female doctors actually have twice as high a risk of infertility as the general population. And just to give some context, today in the United States, about 10 to 13% of U.S. couples suffer from infertility. It's about 1 in 8, roughly. And if you think about, for example, breast cancer, we have a whole month dedicated to breast cancer awareness. And, the NFL, the NBA, they all go kink in October, and really it's the same statistics. It's 1 in 8. For the female physician community, that's 1 in 4. So knowing the how common this is, knowing the prevalence, knowing that there's a very real decline in the number and the quality of the eggs that we're working with after age 35 and definitely after age 40, it's really important that women and or couples have this conversation as they're looking to build their lives. So as you're talking about getting married, buying a house, this needs to be one of those conversation pieces as well.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You know, obviously you have a lot more experience when it comes to the doctors and that kind of thing, because I know you're obviously a physician yourself, but I got to imagine the medical community, as you said, but also like attorneys or lawyers, people that are going for advanced degrees, that may be a lot more common to wait until they're in their 30s to have kids, because, okay, even if they get their MBA and they get that, you know, let's just say mid to late 20s, that doesn't mean they're necessarily ready to start a family at that point. They may be starting their career. They may want to wait 3 to 5 years, and now all of a sudden they're 32, 33, 34. And like you said, they're getting closer to where infertility concerns, not necessarily infertility as a whole, but just infertility concerns probably become a lot more common. Is that fair?
Absolutely, absolutely. And the good news today is that we have the ability to offer people options that were not available maybe 10 years ago or 12 years ago. So, you know, today in today's world, we have the ability to do sperm freezing. We have the ability to do egg freezing. So people are able to preserve their fertility in a way that, you know, really was considered experimental up until about 2012.
Wow. Well, I you know, and again, I gotta imagine that's a little more, I'll say, common or a little more known in maybe some of the wealthier families or the more successful people at younger ages than it is to the general population. Is that a fair statement?
Well, I actually, you know, that's not necessarily true. I would say that access and accessibility, because egg freezing, unfortunately, is a costly procedure. So typically that tends to be the barrier for many people to preserve their fertility, especially when it comes to egg freezing, is the cost barrier. Okay. And so because of that, the wealthier families or families, you know, women who have gone for advanced degrees can typically afford to pursue it. But you would be surprised how many educated people out there, both men and women, who are unfamiliar with these options. Every day I see in my office, you know, I have the conversation, I wish I would have known, I wish someone would have told me. And these are, you know, these are very well-informed, well-educated people. Unfortunately, and I will say, I do think the tide is changing. I do think that we are slowly getting better at educating about the different options. But generally speaking, there is a very big lack of awareness about what fertility preservation options are out there and available to people today.
I think that makes a lot of sense. You know, I think that's that kind of goes into my next, you know, question. What is there a right time frame, or is there a right point that you feel like families or couples should start thinking about when to see a fertility specialist? Meaning, you know, is there a certain point, like maybe after trying to conceive for 3 to 6 months, that they should go see someone? At a certain age, should they start, you know, going to see a specialist before they try to conceive? Like those are questions I'm just curious about myself, and I think would be good information.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's kind of two-part answer to that question. So kind of ending the chapter, or ending the note on fertility preservation, when you talk about sperm freezing and egg freezing, there's really no defined guideline in terms of when somebody should do this. In my own clinical experience, I tend to find that people in their early 30s, at least in today's society, people in their early 30s tend to have that sweet spot where, number one, from a biological standpoint, the egg and sperm are still sort of in their optimal state. And number two, they are sort of developed enough in their own life to know whether or not they want to be parents one day. And number three is they're typically advanced enough in their career to financially afford to do fertility preservation. So if I had to give a range or a sweet spot, if you will, somebody in their early 30s, certainly under age 35, if they're not thinking about pregnancy in the next year, definitely fertility preservation is something I would explore. Now, the second part to your question and sort of shifting the focus now to actual fertility treatments is, okay, let's say I'm newly married. We've been trying for a baby. We've now been trying for a while. Things aren't happening. When to see a specialist? And I'll start with, it's always great to have a conversation with your OBGYN. Women typically are seeing their OBGYN for their annual visit once a year. However, it's not necessary to see an OBGYN to go on to see a fertility specialist. Most of them do not require a referral. You can schedule an appointment directly. The classic teaching is that for women who are under the age of 35, who are having regular monthly menses with ovulation, if they have been trying for over a year, then they need to see a fertility specialist for testing and treatment. If the woman is over the age of 35 and she's been trying for more than 6 months, again, has normal monthly cycles and has positive ovulation, then that time frame gets cut to 6 months. So over the age of 35 is greater than 6 months. Now, that said, there are other scenarios that would be an important time to see a fertility specialist sooner than 6 to 12 months. And so, for example, if the woman is not having regular cycles, if she skips periods 2-3 months at a time, that means that she's not ovulating. She needs to have an evaluation.
Okay.
If the patient has significantly painful periods, that may mean that there's something else going on, things like endometriosis and fibroids. But anyway, I won't get too medical. The point is that it warrants exploration. Or let's say the husband has some sort of known risk factor. Let's say he had, surgery for an undescended testicle, or he had some risk exposure. We know that there are different professions that may be at increased risk for infertility. Just to name a few, things like firefighters, long-distance truck drivers, hair salon workers. So not to single them out, there's obviously many more, but basically it's work exposures where you're potentially being exposed to toxins that may impact your fertility. So there's a lot, even though we use time, so again, just to summarize, under 35, trying for a year, over 35, trying for 6 months, there are many other variables that go into, when to see a fertility specialist. Hopefully that answers your question.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that you answered it perfectly. So thank you. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. I'm going to speak, I guess my next question is more on the financial aspect. I think everyone knows, when it comes to infertility planning, meaning you're either having some infertility concerns or you're getting closer to the age where you're worried about some infertility. I know there's obviously a lot of options, as you said, kind of positioning it to where you can preserve some of the eggs or the sperm and that kind of thing. My question is, if someone's insurance doesn't cover it, is there a general range that someone could kind of not count on, but like maybe try to plan for? Because, again, with some of our clients and some of the people we talk to on the financial side, this is always something that I want to make sure I'm educated on so that when I'm talking to younger professionals and if it ever comes up like, hey, we're starting to try to have a family and, we're not sure yet because of this, I can kind of say, look, these are things that you might want to think about. If your insurance doesn't cover it, these are some of the range of costs you could entail depending on what your situation is.
Absolutely. So the first thing is I want to separate out sort of testing and treatment.
Okay.
For some patients, if they have any underlying issue. So again, going back to the irregular cycles, the very painful periods, et cetera, in some patients, testing might be covered, in many patients not. I want to actually rewind a step further, and I want to make sure your audience understands when it comes to infertility testing and treatment, it really is different than any other medical disease. So insurance, depending on the state, may or may not cover testing and treatment. So infertility is not federally regulated. It is regulated by the state. So it's really important that you understand in the state that you live in, what is the regulation surrounding infertility testing and treatment. So where I practice in California, insurers are not required to cover infertility testing and treatment. And so many patients are self-pay for both aspects. When you talk about an infertility evaluation, you're looking at things like blood work, a dye test to check the fallopian tubes, an ultrasound, a semen analysis, and that can range anywhere from $1,500 to $3,000 just in testing alone. Okay. And I give these ranges because obviously that's going to depend on the state, the region, you know, the city, et cetera, the clinic. But plan, you know, if there's no insurance coverage, if there's no underlying medical issue, plan on anywhere from $1,500 to $3,000 just for testing alone. And then once you move into treatment, treatment really gets divided up into sort of two big buckets. One is a low complexity treatment called IUI, which stands for intrauterine insemination, also known as artificial insemination. That can range anywhere from $1,000 all the way up to $4,000 or $5,000 a month, again, depending on the region and city and clinic. And then when you start talking about IVF, which is, as you very well mentioned, the creation of embryos, you have the use of the lab, the embryologist, there may or may not be genetic testing included, freezing of eggs and embryos. It's a lot more involved. It's a lot more invasive. It's a lot more efficacious. We have much higher success rates with IVF. But understanding that the cost, price point is going to be much different. So that can range anywhere from $15,000, $20,000 to $25,000 for just one attempt. So for patients who either know or let's say they're getting up there in age, they're starting to hover around that 35, that may be something, and from a planning standpoint, that they want to start thinking about, because unfortunately it is not covered through insurance plans. There are some there are some packages or third-party payers available where you can take out a loan. Just think about going to the bank, taking out a personal loan. All of those loans are going to have, a defined interest rate. There's also the existence of, some fertility grants, but those are very, very few and far between. It's rare to see those come up for a patient. So really, it's something that needs to be planned for ahead of time, because it really is a major expense. And for most patients, it ends up being a marathon and not a sprint. So it's not like, oh, I'll just do, the testing, I'll do one thing and I'll be done. Those patients are typically doing multiple rounds before they achieve, their desired outcome.
I'm glad you said that, because, I've heard of, and this has been a minute, so it's not like I heard this the other day or even this year, but I've heard of situations where some clients had to do two or three rounds of IVF, and, as you just said, that's really expensive. So especially as you're getting older, or especially when you start finding out that you may have some infertility issues, from a financial aspect, I think it makes a ton of sense to start having conversations as a couple and looking at setting aside a separate account that could help cover some of these costs if you know that you're going to be going down this road and wanting to start a family, but starting to either A, get closer to 35, or B, starting to think that you've been trying and nothing's happening, or like you mentioned as well, not having regular periods, having some painful periods. So if those things are already known from a financial aspect on that side, I would definitely recommend a family that is starting to try, that is experiencing any one of those things or getting close to 35, that they set up a separate account and start putting some money in there, just so there's something that they're starting to to set aside, because, you know, as you said, and I agree, like IVF can be expensive, and it's not always a one round thing, or it's not right. always a one time and it's done. It could be a couple rounds. It could be a few different times, kinds of treatment. There's a lot of scenarios when it comes to fertility issues that could come into play. And I know we all would agree, you know, whether you're already a parent or you want to become a parent at some point, it's really hard to put a price on that. You know, if you want to start a family and you want to be parents, we're going to do whatever we can. Whatever we have to do to try to make this happen, we're going to do that.
Right.
So I think that's really important. And I think it's also important, some of the things you've said, that there are several types of potential treatments and several variations. So it's important, like you said, to make sure when you're starting to have the conversation, or if you're having any issues, to really see a fertility specialist so you know what you're dealing with.
Absolutely. Yep.
So one last thing that, you know, I know some people may look at it as a last resort. Other people may look at it as a good alternative or a good thing to consider. I got to imagine, and you tell me if I'm wrong, but looking at a surrogate scenario has got to come up for some families at certain points, right?
Yeah, so I love that you actually touch on this topic, because, you know, God bless Hollywood. They have done a great job of talking about fertility, talking about IVF, talking about surrogacy, making it part of our, you know, dinner conversation and normalizing the conversation around infertility. So I'm very, very grateful for that. But I think there's a little bit of an idealized view, or maybe not idealized, maybe just an incomplete view of what surrogacy really entails. So for the first thing I will say is that surrogacy also is state regulated, just like the insurance coverage. And so different states will have different requirements as to the ability to use a surrogate. In some states, it's not allowed at all. In some states, the patient has to have some sort of medical reason why she can't carry to be able to use a surrogate. And in some states, there are no requirements. So I just want to be clear, you need to find out, depending on the state you're in, what the criteria are for the use of a surrogate. But taking it one step further, for a lot of patients, they don't really have somebody they know, a family or friend that, you know, would do that for them, or they may not necessarily want that. And so they end up going through an agency. And so for what most patients are sort of, you know, shocked to find out when they reach that point, is surrogacy is actually quite an expensive process. Typically, we're quoting patients anywhere in the neighborhood from, you know, approximately $50K or higher, depending on the infertility treatments themselves involved. And that's because the surrogate gets, you know, a large percentage of that. And then the agency also takes a large percentage of that. So patients need to be prepared for the sticker shock that comes along with using a gestational surrogate through an agency.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, that definitely makes sense. I got to imagine there's a lot of individuals out there that start thinking about, hey, you know, maybe we need to look at a surrogate because we are having fertility issues. That's just got to be sticker shock to some people.
Right. Right. And I think it's important to understand, you know, each individual case. Are you a candidate or not? What is your individual diagnosis or not, et cetera? But imagine if you've been having trouble, you've maybe spent, you know, money on treatment, et cetera, and then you come to hear those numbers. It can be very disheartening, to be honest. And so I definitely think it's something to at least be aware of, know that it's out there. Hopefully you never have to be in that situation. But if you are, understanding and making sure to prepare for what's coming.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. So this has been great. I really appreciate having you on. I really appreciate your expertise and insight on this, because I think this is a very important topic that is actually becoming more and more relevant to a lot more families, as we talked about, because, you know, people are waiting later to have children and families. People are, you know, want to get their careers started, and especially advanced degrees. I think there's a lot of reasons why this is just becoming more and more of a concern or more and more of something that needs to be planned. So I think that a lot of this info will be really good. And, you know, I really enjoyed having you on, so I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Yeah, as I mentioned in the beginning, I really don't think that this is a topic that's talked about enough. We are seeing more and more patients, you know, coming in. We on the medical side of things, we recognize that there's actually not enough doctors for all the patients that are out there that need us. And so definitely this is something that we're seeing more and more. So for patients, for couples, for young families that are starting out, it's definitely something that you want to be having the conversation about, you know, planning for, and potentially even taking steps for, like opening a bank account. Absolutely.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. So, you know, if someone, you know, if someone listening has some questions, you know, obviously this is a very personal subject for a lot of families and for a lot of couples. So if someone listening wants to reach out, what's the best way to get a hold of you, or what's the best way to kind of reach out, and whether it's ask personal questions either over the phone or setting up a Zoom, or you know, or if there are local people to your office, obviously coming into your office, but you know, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Sure. So I have a few different ways to get in touch with me. As I mentioned, I practice in California. So in terms of giving medical advice, being your physician, providing treatment, you would have to be located in the state of California. And if that's the case, you can call our office. Area code is 559-299-7700. That is Women's Specialty and Fertility Center in California. However, I am also online. I have a YouTube platform where I drop 10-minute educational videos every Monday. You can search me there as Dr. Carolina Sueldo. And lastly, I am on social media. I am on Instagram. Same thing, Dr. Carolina Sueldo. I'm pretty easy to find. And I would love that after your listeners have heard this episode, if they could shoot me a message through social media, just letting me know what they thought of the episode, that would be fabulous.
Yeah, I'll definitely make sure I encourage, you know, I encourage that. So that's, you know, this is the reasons I have different expertise, different professionals, different business owners is because of things like this. I want to provide the platform. I want people to be able to feel like they can reach out, ask questions. So I appreciate you, you offering that as an expert in your field. So again, really appreciate you coming on. I want to thank our listeners. This is another episode of the Inspired Business Leaders Podcast. Again, brought to you by Inspire Wealth. I am your host, Nick Bohr, and I want to thank everyone again and hope to talk to you very soon. Thanks again, Doctor.
Thank you for listening to the Inspired Business Leaders Podcast, brought to you by Inspire Wealth. To learn more about the topics mentioned on today's show, or to listen to past episodes, visit www.inspiredbusinessleaderspodcast.com. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll catch you in the next episode.